So in our story, the water fountains are one of the places where Michael, who is black, is treated differently from the other boy, who is white. There was a time not so long ago in our country when people said that white people and people of color needed to be separate. This was a time called segregation. They said that people who were black and people who were white needed to sit on different parts of the bus, which we saw in our story, that they must go to different schools, that they must live in different parts of town. And water has often been the location where our society has separated people, in many cases where white people have treated people of color badly. During segregation, white people and people of color were supposed to use different bathrooms, swim in different swimming pools, and as we saw in the story, drink from different drinking fountains. And it was only in the last year or two that communities of color have been harmed by having unsafe drinking water. And indigenous communities have been harmed by having their sacred lands and waters desecrated so that oil pipelines can go through. Right now, there are trials happening in courts where volunteers who were trying to save lives have been placing jugs of clean water in the desert, where people who are crossing from Mexico into the United States often die of dehydration. And those volunteers who put the water there are being tried to go to jail. Water is a human right. Everyone deserves it. Every single human being needs it to live. And it's also a sacred symbol, something that is used in almost every religion, including ours, in the mingling of the waters. But water is often used by people with power to belittle or harm people without power. In Michael's world, in our story, he says, "This is just how things are." But he's starting to be curious about that water that comes from the water fountain that's marked whites only. His curiosity, which we talked about last week as being the first step toward courage, is starting to help him feel brave. He's also wondering, why is this how things are? I also wonder, maybe you can wonder with me, what things in our world right now are just how things are? But maybe we should be questioning them. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday that we celebrate tomorrow as a national holiday, he also wondered. He dreamed of a time when the way things are would be more fair. And he didn't only dream. He acted. He marched, he protested, he spoke, and he organized people to resist the unfair treatment of people of color. Now, a lot of people didn't like that. They didn't like that he was causing a fuss. He was disturbing the way things are, and people often don't like that. But I wonder what needs to be disturbed in our world so that it might change. And so Michael got this new perspective, and now he was able to imagine new possibilities. And so if you can't see what's up there, we blew it up for you. That's what he's imagining. And what do we see there? What are those three visions? A doctor, maybe a judge with a gavel, or a scientist. And the place and time where Michael grew up, people didn't tell him that he could do those things. So he always imagined that those things were not a possibility for him. But now, with this new idea that the signs were a lie, he wonders, what else is a lie? Maybe I could do anything I want. And so he even imagines that. Michael's curiosity helps him be courageous. And he found out the truth that the water in the white fountain wasn't any better than the water in his fountain. In fact, it was exactly the same water. The clarity that he got when he fell to the ground and saw that pipe showed him the truth that he had been told a lie. A lie about the water in the fountains and a lie about his place in the world, his worth, his value. And that gave him even more courage. The Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Molly Hausch Gordon, wrote a reflection this week in honor of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. She writes in her reflection about Cornel West's 2015 book called The Radical King, in which he reminds us how King was not the sanitized, gentle preacher that we often remember, but instead far more radical than we honor him with today. West reminds us that prior to his death in 1978, King had disapproval ratings of 72% among white people and 55% among black people because of his opposition to the Vietnam War and his work with the Poor People's Campaign. Today, we are talking about clarity as the second of the parts that all begin with the letter C of courage. Last week was curiosity, today is clarity. Reverend Housh Gordon writes this about King. Quote, he was a man deeply rooted in a sense of intellectual and moral clarity that is all the more stunning when we remember how unpopular it was. He was crystal clear as he wrote in his letter from Birmingham jail that any law that uplifts the human personality is just, and any law that degrades the human personality is unjust. His clarity, she writes, should goad us down the decades as we seek our own clarity. She continues, it has almost become trite to remind folks that if they wonder whether they would have marched with King, they need only ask themselves what they are doing in this contemporary Black Lives Matter movement. And the answer is right there. The truth is, she says, the level of challenge in any given moment diminishes the level of clarity that we have about how and whether we participate in that moment. It's become easy to side ourselves with King in hindsight because we've made his legacy so simple, so respectable, and so unchallenging. Unquote. Clarity will often come after the fact, but finding clarity amidst the complexity, difficulty, and challenge is about, I think, connecting to your heart. Finding courage, and remember last week we learned that the word courage comes from the same word that means heart. Courage comes from paying attention to your heart and heeding the clarity that you find there. Now lately, lots of people have been talking about this Netflix TV show called Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. Or maybe you read her book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Some people love it, some people hate it. Very few people are lukewarm. Marie Kondo, it seems, brings clarity of opinion. But there's this one thing that she does in her method of tidying up, and you can disagree whether or not this is a good method, but she encourages people to take out all the clutter, whether it's the books or the clothes, from everywhere in your house and pile it up in this huge pile before you start getting rid of things or putting things away in an organized fashion. Now, I've watched some of the show, and for everyone who does this, the initial reaction is shock or tears or despair. Being faced with that big mess is difficult, and in fact, that's part of Marie Kondo's method, to force people to face the big mess and convince themselves not that it's not that bad. This is, I think, what King did throughout his ministry. He forced people to look at the mess, and it was uncomfortable. People didn't like it. But without that clarity, people weren't going to act. But even with the big mess in front of us, it's not always clear the path forward, and that is what holds us back from action. Reverend Housh Gordon writes in her reflection, quote, the truth is that we cannot and will not have clear or certain answers to these questions before we're compelled to act. Dr. King did not, civil rights leaders across the generations did not, and we will not. Yet act we must. May it be so. Amen.